Hello, everyone. Thank you very much for joining us for our next installment of the podcast series, 3D Tech Talks. That's the podcast series devoted to keeping you, our listeners, up to date on all things related to 3D printing, or, if you are a technical purist, additive manufacturing. As many of you know who've been following our series these last couple weeks, I will be at the Pacific Design and Manufacturing Show in Anaheim, California, from February 5th to the 7th, and I will be moderating 2 days of 3D printing talks, introducing many of our speakers, and I've been giving them an opportunity to talk about their presentation before we get to that point. Today, we're real happy to have on Dr. Barang Purganji. He is the Director of Materials Technology at GE Additive, and Dr. Purganji will be giving us a talk at 10:15 on February 5th, how multi-materials will transform, very important word, transform additive manufacturing. Barang, thank you for joining us today.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Hello to your listeners, and thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Is there anything you would like to add to that title, Director of Materials Technology at GE Additive? I'm sure you're under all kinds of NDAs and confidentiality clauses, but anything you can share with us about that particular role?
In materials technology, actually, we are trying to address some of the important challenges that in additive manufacturing we are facing, especially with the focus on materials. For example, challenges that we have with the powder manufacturing, controlling the powder as a feedstock in our additive manufacturing modalities, post-processing, thermal processing, which is a big part of achieving to a right quality part, in controlling microstructure, understanding relationship between your incoming material, your process, and the final performance of a part. These are all big areas, and at the same time, the challenges that existing today in additive technologies and in materials technology, we try actually to address those challenges.
Okay, thank you for that overview. Something that I thought I would start off with here that I just thought was kind of an interesting statistic that I read in The Economist. Unfortunately, I don't remember if I read it last year or the year before, but it was in their technology quarterly piece. And what jumped out at me, it's always a terrific read, but that apparently at the U.S. Patent Office, the fastest growing segment is actually patents for material science, not just as they relate to 3D printing, but across a whole wide range of applications. This seems to be the time that the material science and the properties field is really exploding. As someone who appears to be at the very heart of that, is that your perspective, that this is kind of an exciting time? We're seeing extraordinary growth in this area?
Yeah, it is. Actually, it's very interesting that you brought this up. I would like to ask your listeners just to look around wherever they are sitting or, if they are listening to this in a car and driving, just to look around and what you are seeing. Basically, what you are seeing is material, right? So material is actually a big part of our life. And as technology is growing, as our tools for characterization, as the tools for discovery, as our tools for making new materials are getting more and more advanced, there are much more opportunities in material science is actually opening. And it's not just, the metal. We are a GE Additive pretty much focusing on metal, but when you look at the materials, it has a much, much wider enclosure of different materials categories like polymers, ceramics, even like biomaterials, soft materials. So when you look at all this, I'm not surprised that is the number one growing area in terms of generating IP.
Okay. One of the areas where I read a while back that's still a challenge, but my information might be a little dated here, is that say you have two suppliers of metal powder, and just to keep matters simple, we'll say they're both for titanium. One of the ways the industry is still, I'll say, evolving is to get to a set of standards so that regardless of who is providing a particular powder in the same material, that the material properties, the standards, the mechanical properties are consistent across providers. Is that still pretty much a challenge the industry has to overcome or get closer to?
Yeah, well, okay. So that's a big gear shift from what we were talking, and it's more kind of, we call it both laser and electron beam focused now on metal additive manufacturing and what we are doing at GE. Yes, if you look at the additive manufacturing and the modalities that we are working in GE, these are like powder bed fusion techniques. Either you melt your powder with laser or electron beam. So basically you have a machine, you have a software, and you have material. So material is a big part of it. So your incoming material and how your material is interacting with your process, it could be a spreadability, a flowability of your material in your machine. It could be interaction of your material with the electron beam or laser. And it could be how your material actually responding to the post-processing. It controls your final part performance. So it's super critical to have a control on your incoming material. And as a matter of fact, at GE Additive, we are making powder. We have facility in Montreal, Canada, AP&C, and we are making titanium and nickel and aluminum-based powders with a advanced atomization, plasma atomization technique, which provides a very unique property to our powders. And those powders are very well suited in additive manufacturing modalities that we are using, mm-hmm. which basically it means that we are getting desired properties by using this powder. So the control on incoming powder, incoming material, is super critical. And I think we have the ability to control this to maximize our gain in additive manufacturing.
So you're able to keep the powder consistent from, to put it in very layman's terms, you're able to keep the powder consistent from batch to batch to batch, so your customer can be very confident that this powder, whichever metal it is, will have the same performance in the printer time and again.
Yes.
Okay.
So control is the key here. How you control the quality, the chemistry, and characteristics of powder to have a repeatable and reliable process.
Okay. Now, something that jumped out at me when I was going through the list of talks that we'll be hearing at the design show. So your talk is how multi-materials will transform additive manufacturing. When I see the term multi-material, are you talking about just a broad range of material offerings from a company like GE, or are you talking about multi-materials within the same 3D printing process, like either simultaneously or concurrently? Can you walk us through multi-materials a little bit?
Sure, and you can look at it from both angles, and you brought it pretty correctly. That a multi-material could be like, you know, we're talking about a single modality of additive manufacturing, but expanding the current inventory of material to multi-materials and being able, for example, to work on very lightweight material at the same time, super high temperature resistant material. One thing that is pretty known in academia, and I think in industry, is multi-material is referred to being able to print at the same time several materials together. So from those angles, you know, being able to print a part with multi-material either at the same time or expanding our inventory, they're both like transformative. I'll touch base on both aspects of that. But I would like also to bring up to the listeners that the ability to actually place a right material in the right location, and the right material could be, you know, same material family or same alloy family, but just with the process, we play with the process to change mm-hmm. the material composition, or just using different composition. So provide a tremendous opportunity in terms of engineering your part in situ and engineering your outcome of desired properties in situ as you are printing. So so we are not anymore just printing a part for a net shape or final shape and geometry, but also we are printing a part for net property and final property. So that geometry and property printing and achievement happens together, and that provides a tremendous opportunities for engineers and designers actually to play not only with the design but also with the materials that they want to have in their final part.
You just segued actually into my next question, so thank you for doing that. And this is not exactly a material science question, but it is all very much related. So I started in the 3D printing industry 5.5 years ago. And at the time, the notion that there was an approach to designing specifically for additive manufacturing really had not gotten its awareness yet. Most of my customers were still thinking in terms of, here's a part that we've been CNC machining for years or casting. Mm-hmm. Now we'll just take that part and we'll 3D print it. And over time, I would say to them, no. This isn't about taking the same part you've been making the same way for years and now you 3D print it. You have to go back to your CAD level, in most cases, certainly for new products, new product design, go back to your CAD level and redesign to take advantage of an additive process and the materials available in additive. And I think there are some companies, GE certainly being one of them, but there are others that have been really down the road on this. But it seems to me, in my experience, there's a whole middle tier of manufacturing companies from, say, just a couple of hundred employees to a couple thousand that really haven't latched on to designing, or as you put it, engineering, for a 3D printed part. Do you think that awareness is really finally growing, or is there still a pretty good learning curve there? Where do you see that?
Yeah, I think it's still we are learning, but you know, just looking, let's say 5 years ago, we learned a lot. And I think now for like a small, medium enterprise, companies that are not like giants like GE, adoption of additive manufacturing, adoption of all those design rules, let's say for additive manufacturing, are much, much easier compared to 5 years ago. Again, the technology mm-hmm. itself is getting mature every day. Incorporation of software and the having a whole, let's say, life cycle, being able to be semi-predicted or being able to actually model with current softwares, actually helping the companies of the size that you mentioned to faster adopt additive manufacturing. I think we are getting more and more smarter. We are mm-hmm. kind of passing the hype of this technology, let's say. We face the realities. We face the challenges. We are all collectively in additive industry and academia, national labs, government, finding solutions to overcome the challenges, overcome the realities that might actually stop faster adoption of additive manufacturing, especially I would like to emphasize by, you know, small, medium enterprises. One of the main challenges, I'm sure that everyone who is familiar with additive will face is, okay, you are able to design or redesign, and you're able to print a part. How do you qualify it? How do you make sure
right.
that now, you know, from like one or two good parts, you can make parts every time with the same, you know, desired properties, and you can pass the qualifications, and how do you do that? So these are the things that we learned, and as a matter of fact, in GE, we are very keen to provide our experience in how to qualify a part and how to help industries to accelerate adopting additive manufacturing, and share our experience through our consultancy, which is AdWorks. And the material is a big part of it. And back to the material, you know, material and the quality of the material, being able to control your incoming material, being able to control your material properties is absolutely
huge.
Critical in that qualification.
It's absolutely
process.
Critical.
Yeah.
GE doesn't need a plug from me, I know that, but for the value of our listeners, because I think this story is so important and so illustrative of where the design and the material and the technologies all converge, for anyone who hasn't looked it up, go look up the GE turboprop engine. It's a single prop engine where I believe, and Brian, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's being produced in Turkey, where they identified of the whole engine, however many thousands parts that is, they identified 855 that were consolidated into 12, which is just
yeah.
an extraordinary story about the design. So when you say GE can provide experience in the design and the production, years ago we all talked about the GE jet fuel nozzle that was 20 parts. They made it into one.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have this great story, 855 parts into 12. Anyone who's listening who wants to follow this industry and understand the ramifications of design, this is hugely, hugely important. So, like I say, GE doesn't need a plug from me, but I just did it anyway.
I think that's a good point, and that's one of the drivers of additive manufacturing today. That, you know, when you look at your old designs and you want to start a new design, and that's an example you brought it up. Yeah, like if we want to do it conventionally, we had to do like 855 parts in the advanced turboprop engine, which is, I think it's going to be made in Italy, not Turkey,
okay.
I believe. But how actually additive manufacturing provides opportunity to consolidate that, and that's the whole point. You know, everyone that is really trying to think industrialize additive, they should think that why they need to use additive manufacturing. Is that the right solution for their
right.
for the problem? And our experience showing that being able to redesign and actually consolidate parts into single part is providing a big opportunity. But that's not the only thing. And to back to like the material again is a big part. Being able to make your material layer by layer and to tweak the properties of your part based on the geometry and the location, which is a kind of a multi-material because it is single material, but with having a different microstructure, it actually poses different properties. That is a huge, huge opportunity for, you know, light saving, for designing things that provides a super, super performance that we never can achieve through conventional manufacturing. Those are the things that designers, materials, engineers should come together and think about.
And I think an enormous paradox on that, and there's a whole talk on this in Anaheim, a paradox on this is, to use your points, you know, super improved performance, better parts, and at the same time, if you're doing it with fewer parts, how much simpler and lower cost does that make your supply chain? And we won't get into it here, but that's a whole other ramification in the additive world that I think will will make for some very, very interesting management decisions in the years ahead. Brian, I just have a couple more questions. And the first one, I'm going to do my best to put you on the spot here. So get ready.
Okay.
Tell me about the factory 25 years from now. and remember, this is being recorded.
Yeah, those are the type of questions that you need to, you know, read Isaac Asimov, you know, before answering that, you know. And he has been pretty correct, you know, in predicting how actually the future looks like. You know, I don't know. Okay, this
right.
is my honest answer, that I don't know how in 25 years they look like. My feeling is that everything gets super, super smart. So in 25 years, we will manufacture things much smarter. So
less waste, for sure.
Yes. Not only less waste, but also smarter in terms of what do we manufacture, where do we manufacture, how do we manufacture, and also using the capacity, you know, kind of having a network of manufacturing sites, setups, machines that are all kind of connected or being able to connect to each other. It would be an artificial intelligence heavily involved. But today we are making things because we can do it, right, or we have done this before. But we haven't really put enough time and energy, because it's expensive to revisit and say that, do we really do the right thing here? Are we using the best available manufacturing setup? Is it minimizing the cost, minimizing the energy? Is it green? You know, can we incorporate so many other factors into our decision making matrix? But with having artificial intelligence, I think we can make much more smart decisions. And the manufacturing mm-hmm. would be much more smart. You know, if you look at the images, you know, or you want to just imagine something, it will be super clean, I believe. Not anymore 19th
yes.
or early 20th centuries, you know, lots of the
strokes. I think you're right about that.
Manufacturing side. Yeah. And everything would be electricized pretty much, not using lots of the fossil fuels. That's
yep.
that's how I'm looking at it. And additive manufacturing certainly would be a big part of it.
The of everything you listed, the one that I have the biggest personal interest in, I'm not saying this should be everyone's big question, but of all the things you listed, you said where it'll be manufactured. And if it starts to become cost effective, and we don't know this mm-hmm. yet, but if it starts to become cost effective to make consumer appliance parts, auto parts, very industrial equipment parts closer to where they will be needed, well, the impact on mm-hmm. freight forwarding and warehousing and distribution and packaging potentially will be just enormous. Now, we don't know any of this yet. It's all speculation,
mm-hmm.
but that's
yep.
that's the questions I really get wondering about.
Right.
Brian, so on Tuesday, February 5th, 10:15, you're going to give your talk, How Multi-Materials Will Transform Additive Manufacturing. What, if I were to ask you, is there one thing above all else you'd like the attendee to walk out of there being aware of, or, you know, what kind of insight would you like that attendee to walk out of there thinking, gee, I hadn't thought of that? Is there one above all the others?
Yeah, I think that I would like everyone get inspired by the state of the technology today, and also when they are walking out, thinking about what this technology can provide for their daily life, for their day-to-day business, and how they are getting affected by this. This is disruptive technology. Anyone that's thinking about manufacturing, anyone that's thinking about health, energy, transportation, you just name it, will one
yeah.
way or other way will get affected by this. So I would like to actually, in an ideal case, when people walking out of the session, they all have a question that what is next for me and for my business and for my family and for my kids in this, and how I am going to use this technology, to learn about this technology, and to implement this technology for a better future.
I love how you started your answer with the word inspired. You said a lot of great things there, but to me that's, and how apropos after this past NFL weekend, that's the right kickoff word, inspired. Well, Barang, I know you're very, very busy in your role. Again, Director of Materials Technology at GE Additive. I'm really looking forward to shaking your hand and to hearing your talk on February 5th at the Anaheim Convention Center. This has been extremely insightful. I'm sure our listeners are scribbling down notes, or at least if they're not, they should have been. And thank you for taking the time to talk with us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to seeing you and talking to your audience in February 5th.
Okay.